Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And my guest today is somebody that I've known for quite a number of years. Somebody that has what I consider one of the best SEO mindsets in the industry. And somebody I'm proud to have known all these years. It's none other than the Managing Director of Digiloft. Please welcome James Brockbank.
Hi, Mark. How are we doing? Thank you for having me on. And yeah, as you say, I think, you know, we've known each other a long time now, fellow Lancashire people and straight-talking Northerners. And yeah, really excited to have a chat and share my take on SEO, digital PR, everything that's wrong with the world that we work in.
We haven't got that long.
No, I know we haven't, but we can have a good try, can't we?
Yeah. Now, for the people watching this and listening to this who doesn't understand your background, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of when you started in the industry, what you were doing then, and where you are now and how you got there?
I've been doing SEO for, it'll be 15 years this year. So I got into it mid to end 2009. And my God, it was all very, very different back then. I started out as an agency in a junior role. And we were buying links from India, spamming title tags, no consideration for content quality. And it worked. And I think, you know, from there, I was there three, four years until really Penguin and Panda hit. And I think, you know, from there, I was a bit embarrassed to do SEO the way that most people were doing SEO back then. It was, you know, I think Penguin was a wake-up call to a lot of people. And I think certainly the way I'd been taught SEO was that it's not manipulative. These things are fine because they work. If they didn't work, and then, you know, if they weren't right, then they wouldn't work. But I think, you know, Penguin was the wake-up call. And where I got to after that was the frustration that everyone went from one bad tactic to another. You know, when I started out in SEO, you know, most agencies were buying private blog network links from India, from overseas. It was pure spam. They then moved to guest posting, and I call it guest posting as we all did, but it was just writing bullshit 200-300 word blog posts with an exact match anchor text link and going, this is link building. And I didn't fall out of love with the industry and what we do. I've loved SEO and the, you know, the buzz around ranking a website, driving growth, having an impact on other people's businesses since the day I got into it. But what I fell out of love with was the reputation SEO had, and the fact that most SEOs back then went from one manipulative tactic to another. There was no consideration for content quality. There was no consideration for, should you be earning these links? Do you have the right to rank? And I think, you know, you mentioned, Mark, that, you know, we've always aligned on mindset. And I think, you know, my mindset since probably 2012, 2013 has been that SEO should have never been a manipulative tactic. It was for a long time. I think even to this day, there are business owners that have been stung 10, 12 years ago that had their businesses wiped out by Penguin. And in their mind, you know, what did the article call us? A bunch of content goblins and fraudsters. You know, it's should have never been that way. You know, SEO is a tactic to increase visibility of a site. It's not a, you know, it should never be cheating the system. And I think, you know, when I started out in SEO, I was always taught that SEO is about cheating the system. And I think, you know, where I got to launching my own agency from is, I just didn't have the confidence that certainly in 2014. I didn't have the confidence that a lot of other agencies, certainly, you know, don't forget this was a pre-COVID world. You know, I was, you know, I grew up in Lancaster, certainly in that part of the Northwest. You know, I had kids by then. I had no desire to be traveling on the train to Manchester every day. We were all office based. So I was like, okay, you know, let's do it. Let's go on my own. We then, as an agency, you know, I founded Digitaloft in end of 2013, which means we come on to 11 years this year. Started out freelancing on my own. And by 2015, we were doing what we now call digital PR. You know, one of the things I'm very proud to say is that we were doing digital PR long before it was called digital PR. We called it content-led link building, content marketing, ego bait, you know, all these different names that it had for a while. We were effectively using content in one way or another to earn links. And I think, you know, if you look back at what I did, what we did as an agency in 2015 to build links, it's not what we did today. You know, would we do, you know, are some of the things we did back then embarrassing? Yes. But actually, it was a damn sight better than what most people were doing. You know, we got into the, you know, the routine of infographics, of content that was maybe produced more to earn links than build a reputation. But this was before we were, you know, yes, we heard a little bit about EAT and the quality rating guidelines. I think, you know, certainly back in 2014, 2015, I was of the mindset that EEA was complete bullshit. How can Google actually, you know, how can Google determine these things? And I think back then, it was probably the right viewpoint to have. And I think digital PR, you know, my take was when everybody's buying links or building links on private blog networks, any link from an authority source, from the Daily Telegraph, from the Daily Mail, is a better link than what competitors are doing. And again, it works. But I think, you know, where we are today, which is, you know, to me, our PR team alone is 50 people plus. You know, I think we're one of the largest digital PR team, specialist digital PR teams in the UK right now. And it's a million miles from what we did back then. You know, now we're very, very much on leveraging digital PR to not just build links, but to demonstrate and align with the principles of EEAT to build a brand's reputation. And, you know, as a whirlwind tour, you know, over the past 15 years, I've done tech SEO, I've done content marketing, I've done digital PR, I've done strategy. I would say, you know, and I'm still very hands-on. You know, I will never, you know, whilst I'm maybe not directly working on client accounts day in, day out, staying at the forefront of what's working in SEO and digital PR right now is something I will always do. You know, I've no desire to be hands-off. You know, what I love doing is ranking websites on Google, whether that's what worked 10 years ago, whether that's what works today, whether that's figuring out what's going to work in 10 years' time. And yeah, you know, it's straight talking bullshit free SEO, you know, and I think, you know, we're in an industry where the industry saw rapid growth in COVID. And, you know, we saw so many people's sites decimated last year by the helpful content update because they were following misinformation. They were following advice on Twitter, on social media, that anyone with a bit of experience could go, yeah, it might work for you for 3 months, for 6 months. You ain't got a sustainable business. And I think, you know, we come on to today, if you want to succeed with organic search, yeah, you won't, you know, every single day you see people on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it now, talking about the quality of the SERPs, you know, and I think we're very, very well timed here, Mark, given Google's core algorithm update announcement yesterday. I've got lots of thoughts on that. But I think, you know, where we get, you know, we've spent the last, what, 6-7 months with SEOs, webmasters ripping apart the quality of the SERPs. But I think, you know, half of that is them going, okay, well, why are brands ranking? Why have these small niche, you know, I hate the term niche sites, but let's just use it. You know, why have these specialist sites or these smaller sites been hit and the big brands haven't? It's reputation. And I think, you know, if we talk about, you know, we can talk about the fine elements of EEAT all day long. it is reputation. And a lot of businesses have tried to fake it by demonstrating EEAT or demonstrating a reputation that they haven't built. You build your reputation, then you demonstrate it. And, you know, I think we can overthink EEAT, but actually when you align with this mindset of how do I positively build a reputation and make people trust me, the big brands that have been winning on the SERPs for the last however many years, you know, it's not a new thing that people are saying brands have an unfair advantage, but people trust them. And I think, you know, a great, you know, I've been running over the, you know, the past few weeks internally with our PR teams, a sort of two-hour intensive interactive training course on EEAT to keep our team at the forefront of what we're seeing happening here. And one of the examples I'm giving in that is, forget Google for a minute, forget the web. If you're down the pub with your mates and you're looking for a recommendation on a holiday destination, are you going to trust your mate who goes, oh yeah, I visited so-and-so last year, we really enjoyed this restaurant, this was a great thing to do? Or the guy who goes, or the woman who goes, how about there? I've heard that's pretty good. You're buying a house and you're looking for a mortgage broker. You would expect that mortgage broker to have formal expertise, qualifications, accreditations. So why are we all so shocked that the same expectations are now being upheld online? It's, you know, why would you trust a recommendation from someone who hasn't been there, done that, experienced something? And it's what baffles me that the concept of EEAT to so many people seems so hard to grasp. Because take it into an offline concept, and it's so fucking easy to get your head around. And it's because we overthink it. We think on it on, oh, well, you know, do we need to, you know, we need to build author pages. You need to build your reputation. And I think, you know, as SEO, you know, we've all fallen into this trap of thinking, you know, oh, you know, what do I do here? How can I quickly, you can't quickly build your reputation. Build your reputation, build a brand. You know, whether we talk about, you know, when people talk about building a brand, you know, Carrie Rose has been talking about this for years. You know, build your brand first and then everything else falls into place. You know, you can't build a brand overnight. You can't build a brand or build a reputation. You know, think about them in the same way. You can't do that overnight. It takes years. You can't do that by building author pages. You can't do that by adding reviewed by so-and-so. If you build your reputation first, demonstrating it becomes really, really easy. But if you haven't built it, you've nothing to demonstrate. And I think one of the big things that we have here is digital PR is one of the tactics that as marketers, as search marketers, we can leverage to build that reputation. You know, EEAT to me, it's, you know, it's there in the quality rater guidelines that it is not just what you say about yourselves. It is what other people say. You know, I think we were discussing this on Twitter last week, weren't we, Mark? You know, it's not just what you say. You know, you can say anything about yourself, but getting other people to say it, that's your reputation. And I think that that's where we are. You know, we need to stop overcomplicating these concepts, looking for things that we can do to take a shortcut. You know, Google is closing the loopholes. The shortcuts that once existed are quickly disappearing. Yes, there will always be ways. You know, we only have to look at parasite SEO, you know. But don't get me wrong. There are people making an awful lot of money from that. But those people know it ain't going to last forever. And I think that's the difference. You know, and I think where we are as an industry, we have a responsibility for people getting into the industry. You know, have I had sites that were absolutely torn up by the helpful content update? Yes. But they were never, you know, they should have never ranked So, you know, some sites, I've had sites that were heavily rewarded by the helpful content update. And I think I've always viewed things as an SEO, I have a responsibility for, you know, running an agency that's doing SEO work for clients to have firsthand, you know, ironic what I'm about to say, to have firsthand experience of what works and what doesn't work. I've been doing this long enough to be aware of the risks. Now, if I go and, you know, and I will be very open, I have project sites of my own that are pure AI content, unedited, pure AI content on expired domain names. I'm fully aware of the risks. Would I ever use those tactics for a client? Not a chance, because actually, to me, they are, above anything else, they are research projects. And, you know, that site in question, which ironically is one of the ones that performed really well in the helpful content update, why did I launch that as a test project? There's something like 250 pages-ish of AI content. Shit theme, expired domain, ranking really, really well for competitive terms. It's a research project. I know the risks. I am never, ever going to build a business or build a team of people who rely on that. And I think that's where we all started falling into traps. There were people going, I'm making 30 grand a month. You can do this too. Follow what I'm doing and use AI. Change out the brand name and publish that content 30 times. You know, I think, you know, people were calling it like brand swapping. Takes me back to the days of article spinning in 2010, 2011. And I don't like the term black hat or grey hat. In fact, I despise the terms. And I think with experience comes a knowledge of the risks involved in something. And I don't, you know, if there is a loophole you can exploit and you know the risks, fair play to you. My issue is when people are almost being tricked into thinking you can make a sustainable business from spamming like this. That's my issue with it. It's the misinformation. You know, there's people like Charles Flo, Craig Campbell, who I've got every respect for those guys. You know, they know exactly what they're doing when they're leveraging Parasite SEO to make thousands and thousands of dollars. But they're smart enough and experienced enough to know it won't work forever. That would, that will only ever be a small proportion of their revenue. And then they'll be on to the next thing. Very smart people who know how to not game the system, but they're doubling down on something whilst it works. It doesn't take much to know that the way people started going, you can go and spin up a page on a totally irrelevant site if it has authority at the moment and suddenly rank for these high-paying affiliate terms, Google was going to come down on that. And I think, you know, it's expectations. And my personal viewpoint is, we're many years beyond black hat, white hat. It's what's right for the situation you're in. And if it's a client who's, I don't like calling it real businesses, but you know what I mean, businesses that could exist off Google, of which an e-commerce store is one. You know, an e-commerce store can still sell their goods if Google didn't exist. Most of these niche sites couldn't exist without Google because they were spamming. And some of us knew that. I don't have an issue with that. You know, I think there's, you know, I'm not talking fraudulent activity in any way, shape or form. I'm talking maybe content that wasn't produced by experts. And I think that's the biggest thing that's changed in the last few years. Is the, you know, the experience and the expertise parts of EEAT have become so incredibly important. And there's a fine line between spam and content that's well written, but that doesn't offer anything new. And I think that's where we are. But I think, you know, it's ironically, you know, as I say, I've got, you know, at least one project test site that's pure AI on an expired domain that were ranking well. I have sites that were 100% human written content that saw differing levels of impact. But there's one common factor. There's no experience writing on topics for search, you know, and I think if I think back to Penguin in 2012, I think we were all so naive to think Google will never come after manipulative link building. And I think a lot of SEOs were quite shocked when Google did. You know, we saw a wave of manual penalties, then we saw Penguin. And I think, you know, when we look back, this the helpful content update reminds me so much of that. Some people running sites reliant on Google traffic should have seen it coming. And I think that's what I mean by bringing in your experience as an SEO. You might rank for terms, big terms, for 3 months. You might get 6 months. You might get 12 months. You might get 5 years. You might get 2 weeks. But that's when you're writing on things that you don't really have the ability or the background and reputation to write about. You take what I term a real business. And I think a great example I saw back when the helpful content update last September refreshed was, I think there was an example of, what was it? An air conditioning repair company in the US. And people were going, this content's not garbage, but it was, you know, it was clearly written by a, it wasn't professional copywritten. It was probably written by a tradesperson. And, you know, I'd be sloppy if I went and did plumbing. You know, it's not where my skills lie. So actually, you know, a plumber or an air conditioning installer writing content for a small air conditioning repair site, good on him. And that's the sort of thing that got rewarded. But actually, you started to look at this site. I think people were ripping it apart. I think it was Marie Haynes who first shared it or responded to it. And it made so much sense. If you are going and physically doing air conditioning repairs, simply by the nature of existing and the work you do, you are building experience. And I would assume expertise in that. Real businesses won because they weren't manipulating anything. They had no idea what EEAT was. They were just doing what they do. And I think, you know, we have to get out of this mindset that EEAT is, you know, for a lot of businesses, they've built the EEAT. Where marketers come in is demonstrating that. Make it easy to corroborate that on page, that off page. Most real businesses have built EEAT signals. They have their accreditations. They have their experts. They have their years of experience. But most of them don't do a great job of demonstrating it. And I think that's where, you know, you can't, thinking back to our Twitter conversation last week, you know, you can't demonstrate something that you've not built.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there goes about 10 questions that we're going to ask.
I know.
But
this is like a typical catch-up of ours. We go down every rabbit hole there is.
It is, though. I see the industry totally isolated, split up into different parts. And for me, if you are working on somebody's business that's not your own, you cannot take risk with that business because I have physically seen people lose the jobs because of SEOs taking risks.
Me too.
You know.
And I think, you know, I've seen it. I've seen it at all sorts of levels. And, you know, I think the one thing that gets me is, you know, maybe not quite as much now, but go back a few years, you know, we had conversations with clients or prospective clients where other SEOs had ruined their business. it would have taken, you know, I believe that almost anything like that can be turned around. It takes a lot of work. It takes time. And it's not necessarily, you know, if I take on a recovery project that is from effectively ruining a reputation, and, you know, I'm not talking about technical issues here. I'm talking about things where their online reputation, whether that's in Google's eyes or customers, has been ruined. It takes time. I can't, in a lot of cases, turn that round in a month, 3 months. But the reality is these businesses, by the time they cycle through two agencies or two SEOs, it's too late. They've lost the business. And I think, you know, this is where I, you know, come into this thing of black hat versus white hat. I'll do what I want for myself on my own sites. They are not supporting anybody. You know, I've always made a thing of, you know, I've got test sites. I've got sites that earn differing amounts of revenue in there. And I don't think that's not a reflection. You know, an experienced SEO, a great SEO, knows what to use when. And it comes down to what are the goals. And I think, you know, the goals for most client businesses are sustainable growth. And once that growth is achieved, to maintain that growth. And I think, you know, we can go into the ethics of SEO, but I think, you know, where we are is that, you know, you are, when you're playing with somebody else's livelihood, you have a duty to make very different decisions to the ones you make for yourself. And I think it comes back, you know, I say it in everything to do with business. Do or say what you want, but be prepared to deal with the consequences when it goes badly. And I think that's, you know, it's a mindset to go in with, you know, whether you're managing people, whether you're being arrogant on social media, you know, do and say what you want, but you're going to have to deal with the consequences afterwards. And that is the same with recommending SEO tactics. There are some SEOs who will recommend manipulative tactics to this day to clients. Just be prepared to answer some very, very tough questions and have some very tough conversations when it all goes wrong. And it's, you've got to think long term, you know, and I think that's always, you know, it's the education piece working with clients as well. So, you know, we've all been there. A client goes, we have 3 months to save this business. Nobody's saving that business in 3 months. If it is as bad as, you know, if it's tech issues, if there's a botched migration, of course you can. But when it's reputation based, and, you know, reputation, of course, can be manipulative links, it ain't happening. And I think, you know, you've got a duty as an SEO to be honest and say, this ain't happening. And I think, you know, that's where we have this almost ethical dilemma sometimes, that you might desperately want to help these people, but it's too late. And I think that's where we have a duty of education on, you know, I still, you know, maybe not as much as I would like to, but I still, you know, I spend a lot of time putting content online, producing content on the grounds that I believe as an industry, we all have a place to make it better. And I think, you know, where I genuinely don't believe that there's many people out there who are honestly trying to scam businesses and take money and not deliver. I think we're in an industry that, you know, don't get me wrong, I am not on board, you know. I don't believe the SEO industry could or should be regulated. I think it'd be a minefield. Who does it? What does it look like? You know, if I'm tasked with driving growth for an e-commerce store, Matt, let's say, through SEO, and you're tasked with the same thing, what's, you know, I can almost guarantee we're not going to take the same approach. It doesn't mean either of us is wrong, and it doesn't mean either of us won't see the growth. But how do you regulate something that's, there's so many different paths to the same result? And, you know, so I'm not, you know, it comes up every year or two, doesn't it? You know, people saying, oh, this industry needs to be regulated. I'm not on board with that. I think it'd be a backward step. I think it would be, it's easy to look on paper like you know what you're doing. But I think the best way to showcase that is to give back to the industry and educate. You know, 15 years ago when I started, there was, you know, there was Moz, and that was about your lot. There was Moz, search engine land for news. That was your lot, you know. And I think, you know, the things I learned from Whiteboard Friday when I was 21, 22 were phenomenal. You know, it was a really great, you know, it was advanced at the time. You know, it was at the real forefront of here is what's right and here is what's wrong. And I think we have a duty to, you know, to educate clients, other people in the industry, not how to do, but how to think. And I think, you know, digital PR is probably the biggest grey area, I think, right now. In that, you know, I know you really want to talk about digital PR, so I'm trying my best to pivot towards that. When we started doing digital PR, or in its form then in sort of 2014, end of 2014, 2015, it was very different to today. But I think we are still in a place where it's seen as a one-size-fits-all tactic. And I think digital PR in 2024, it's an umbrella term for data-driven campaigns, for expert comments, for reactive PR, for product PR, for brand PR. And as experts, we have to be in a position to go, this is what is going to have the biggest impact for this business. And, you know, I think the one I think we need to touch on is relevancy. And the tables have turned. You know, I think, you know, if I go back 5-6 years, I held the mindset that any authoritative link, unless it's wildly removed, is a good link. And I think at the time it was. You know, I think what we have to remember is that best practices and effective tactics shift. And, you know, there are campaigns that we did in 2015, 2016 that we would not go anywhere near today because they're just not relevant enough. You know, to me, in 2024, yes, we talk about links from digital PR, but at the end of the day, why do we want links? Why do we want mentions in the press? Because it builds the reputation of our clients' sites. It turns a business into a brand. If people see you enough in the press, if people see you've been featured here, featured there, then people learn to trust you. When people trust your brand and see your brand, they then see you on the SERPs ranking for a non-brand query. They are more likely to click that result because of brand familiarity. Digital PR isn't just about links. And, you know, coming from a, you know, I am an SEO. I am not a digital PR. I am not a general marketer. I am an SEO. I always will be an SEO. It's not just about links. Links should be a byproduct of digital PR. And when you do the things that promote your business, promote your brand, get in front of the right people and become a voice for relevant topics, the links you earn as a byproduct of that are the links that Google rewards. And my mindset has shifted on that over the past 5 years as the industry's changed. And I think, you know, I think too many of us sort of bullshit around the fact that, you know, I don't think we should hide what we've done in the past just because, you know, it worked. These things worked 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And on the flip side, I don't believe Google will ever penalize or punish a business for building irrelevant links from authoritative publications. I think what will happen is that those links over time become less and less effective and their impact is not really seen. You know, I can't see a world where Google would punish a site for having a questionable relevance link from an authority publication. I just can't see it. I think Google has tried its best and quite successfully moved away from link-based penalties, link-based algorithmic adjustments, to identify at source whether a link should count or not, whether a link should be, have, you know, whether it should have an impact. And I think, you know, and I'm okay with that. You know, I think if these tactics were better than what everybody else was doing at the time, great. They were impactful. They delivered the results. Just because, you know, it's like with anything, you know, 6 years, 7 years, it's a long time. Things change. And I think, you know, you've got to stay at the forefront of that and you've got to shift as things shift. My issue with digital PR is where there's no wider SEO education. One of the things we know, I would say 90% of our digital PR client base, their primary goal and reason for engaging us is to build links. But that doesn't mean you can't go in with that mindset of links being a byproduct of promoting a business, building a brand, building reputation. They are the links that have an impact. And I think, you know, let's not shy away from the fact that it is usually SEO budgets that are funding digital PR. But actually what that means is, as agency owners, as agency leaders, we've got a massive, massive responsibility to educate our teams on how digital PR aligns with SEO, how digital PR can be leveraged to contribute to increasing and maintaining visibility on the SERPs, not just today, but tomorrow, next year. And I think, you know, the biggest lever we can pull right now is relevancy. And that, you know, whether that's a link, whether that's a brand mention, whether that's a follow link, whether, you know, followed link or no follow link, I don't care. And I think, you know, that's not from a perspective of not knowing, you know, in an ideal world, every link would be a follow link. And I say that in an ideal world as an SEO. Step into the realistic world and it ain't going to happen. It's unnatural. If the Daily Mail is no following all of their external links, that's not just me or my client who's getting no follow links from the Daily Mail. That's every other brand as well. Every competitor is in the same position. And I mean, my take is that, you know, having spent a lot of time diving deep into Google patents from PageRank onwards, you know, going back 20, 25 years, no follow is, you know, no follow being made a hint rather than a directive to me, I think, was what we needed to know, that there are situations when Google knows, you know, we get into the whole concept of seed sites and, you know, the distance of a link from one of these trusted seed sites in a seed set. And yes, we're getting quite techie, we're getting quite complex into the, you know, the workings of Google's algorithm, but I don't think we need to, as SEOs, we don't need to understand them in that much complexity to be able to say, right, okay, this, we have enough evidence to suggest that as a PR, as an SEO, if I've got the chance of a link on the Daily Telegraph, the Guardian, the BBC, I don't give a shit if that's follow or no follow. There is enough evidence out there to go, that is building reputation, that is building trust. And I think, you know, we're at a place where the follow, the no follow argument, the link, no link, you know, it's getting old, it's getting boring. And I think we're at a point where I'm happy to sit down with anybody and go, look, you know, I think the old school way of going, follow links are good, no follow links are bad, it's gone. And I think, you know, you have a challenge as a service provider, as an agency, on, you've got to balance it with quantifying success. And I think, you know, there's that, you know, it's difficult when, you know, a lot of our clients are engaging us for digital PR and digital PR only. They've got in-house SEO teams. How do you quantify success if you're not doing it on the number of pieces of coverage that are earned? And I think, you know, there's a debate, you know, there's a debate to be had. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work at the moment. You know, we brought a data scientist in last year to join the team. to do a lot of work around sort of modeling what a great link looks like from a perspective of, does data say that this link is likely to have an impact? And we've got a duty to go above and beyond like that. But I think, you know, at the top level, it's relevancy. If we're landing relevant coverage, yes, ideally it will link. Yes, ideally it will be followed. But if we get a brand mention from the BBC, we only have to look at the work Google's been doing around the knowledge graph, around understanding entities, to know that Google's aware. You know, we're in a point in 2024 where if there is a brand mention supported by the right signals, Google knows. And whether or not that's used as a ranking factor, again, I think we're getting too deep into this. You know, Google rewards businesses that have built a positive reputation. Yeah. A lot of brands that rank, a lot of the brands that people get frustrated with have spent years and years and years building reputation. Why should a business that starts tomorrow, why should they outrank that site? And yes, there's nuances. Yes, you know, there are. You then come onto the thing that, you know, you then get onto that discussion and that, you know, debate on, okay, well, actually, as a small agile business, you can build reputation faster than some of these giants can maintain it. And I think, you know, there's all these considerations, but at the end of the day, if your SEO strategy, if your digital PR strategy is aligned with positively building a brand's reputation, then you're doing the right things. And I, you know, I've yet to see examples of consistently doing these things, and consistently in one industry looks very different to consistently in another industry. There's not many examples of people doing these things and not being rewarded. And I think, you know, that's where it's hard to hear, you know, it's hard to hear sometimes for businesses. You know, I would not like to be a startup today trying to disrupt a sector. I would not like to be in it. You are at a disadvantage on the fact that we're, you know, Google's been the key player for many, many, many years. You know, certainly from an SEO perspective. And I think that's where, you know, would I recommend SEO for a startup on a limited budget over, depending on the business, you know, some businesses would be better off nailing a TikTok strategy and building a brand that way and then visiting SEO. And I think, you know, it's not the right marketing channel for every business right now where they are on their journey. And I think, you know, the days of that being possible are gone. And it's hard to hear.
Yeah. Well, everything you're saying there, it's so, when you strip it right back, it just seems obvious.
It does. And I think
it just seems obvious. And I think from my perspective, when I'm looking from an outside-in on digital PR, and I mean, I've dabbled. I'm nowhere near an expert on digital PR. I've dabbled and I've done some good stuff. But I see most of the digital PR industry just concentrating on, well, how many links have I generated? But what should the industry be focusing on as the metric of a successful digital PR campaign?
And this is where, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, this is where it gets so hard, because, you know, as agencies, as service providers, we are asked to demonstrate our impact or demonstrate a return on investment, demonstrate what success looks like. And I genuinely believe that you can, you know, my personal opinion is that link numbers alone aren't the best way to measure success. But as an agency, as a service provider, you are also a little bit at the mercy of what other people do. The fact that, you know, digital PR is still in its infancy. You know, I think it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that I don't think anybody yet has got right. Because, you know, if you think about it from my perspective or our perspective as an agency, if we are working with a client who is engaging us to run digital PR activity, and we are not responsible for their tech SEO, their content strategy, wider parts of their growth, we can't be held fully accountable for organic growth. Why? Because a dev could go and leave a no-index tag on a page. That page could be de-indexed. That's not us. So actually being held accountable, or, you know, being held accountable as a measure of success, unless you are controlling a full strategy, is, in my opinion, unfair on an agency. If you are responsible or have control over a full strategy, it is a very, very different picture. But when you are only doing part of it, you then have the fact that we can go, you know, we can go and earn 20 links, 20 great links that we have every confidence are going to be rewarded by Google. But a competitor could go, okay, we're going to triple or quadruple our investment and we're going to outpace. Now, it doesn't mean we've not performed. And again, we're getting into the specifics and the finer details of why link numbers alone aren't the... Links are a means to an end. You know, links contribute to organic growth. And I think there comes a point where it is, you know, what we're talking about, it is the hardest thing. And I don't think anybody has the right answer. We've all, you know, different agencies have different ways of doing it. But I think in an ideal world, you know, you have to start breaking it down to things like, you know, one of the things we, you know, or I would always recommend saying, if you're analyzing the impact of digital PR, is to say, right, okay, what pages did we earn links to? If they're commercial pages, great. If they're not, you look at the informational page and where we internally linked through to. Let's say we've got five pages that we've directly or indirectly earned links to. Go and look over the last probably 3 to 6 months. What was the growth in organic traffic, impressions, depending on where you are in a business's life cycle? What was the growth you saw for each of those pages that we were influencing with links directly or indirectly? How does that compare to the site's average? What that means is you can start to isolate out, okay, well, we earned this group of links. Some of them linked directly to these pages. Some of them were passing link authority indirectly via internal linking. And we saw growth on this page, let's say, of 50% quarter on quarter or year on year. The site average might have been 20%. You're starting to get into a way that you can go, we're breaking it down a bit more granular. And I think, you know, a lot of things in SEO should be broken down a lot more granular. Looking at things site-wide rarely tells you anything useful. Start to break it down more granular, and we can start to have conversations and say, right, okay, this group of pages that we directly or indirectly influenced via link authority saw a growth of X, and this was X percent higher than the site's average. And I think it comes down to who is owning an overall strategy. There should be someone in any business owning an SEO strategy. That's an agency. Great. If it's not, if that's somebody in-house, if it's another agency, there has to be somebody directing, I am responsible for growth. As part of that growth, I need links. I need authority links. I need links on these topics from this type of sites. And I think, in all honesty, all too often, agencies, digital PRs, they work the wrong way. Rather than going, what are the business goals? And, you know, I'm not, you know, at top level, that's going to be money in the bank, revenue. Waterfall that down to, okay, to hit those goals on the average order value conversion rate, I need this many sessions. Okay. Then break that down more granular. What are my different options for driving that increase in traffic I need? Okay, let's say you break it down to go, right, okay, based on click-through rate averages, we can model that actually, if we can, you know, and again, we're talking about link numbers the same way we could talk about keyword rankings. They're a means to an end. But I think, you know, you then go, okay, if I can increase the average ranking of these 200 keyword variations that this page is visible for, based on click-through rate averages in this sector, you know, I think it's Advanced Web Ranking that have a really great breakdown of click-through rate by sector. Don't apply global averages. Use location and industry if possible. You can start to model, well, if I increase this page or page group, you know, I'm not a big believer of focusing on single pages, but focus on at topic level. If we can increase the average ranking of this, 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 and this, we expect to get this much traffic. Then you break it down and go, you know, the best thing any SEO can do is take either a seed keyword, a more granular, a long tail keyword, a page group, and go, why am I not ranking? Why is this site not ranking higher for this keyword or this group? Only then can you go, okay, well, when we analyze and reverse engineer what's ranking on the SERPs, we have a link gap. We have a supporting content gap. We have tech issues. Only then can you confidently go, this is what I need. The challenge you get in digital PR is if you are being engaged to build links, who is owning that overall SEO strategy to go, I need links on this topic or on these topics, internal links to these pages, you get into a gray area. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're working really, really hard on over the past year is to work closer with clients who maybe don't have that in place to go, to see that biggest impact. You know, we're proactively asking clients every quarter, what are your keyword growth goals? What are the page groups you're targeting? Where, you know, and some will go, we just want links, and it's an opportunity to educate. So how to measure digital PR success is something that I can't confidently answer, because I don't think anyone has yet figured out the right solution. There are many solutions, but I think it depends on, you know, at the end of the day, it's money in the bank. But you then break that down into, well, where do an agency's responsibilities, who's responsible for what? And I think, you know, that is not saying we're trying to get out of accountability. It's not that at all. It's about going, if we're being engaged and left to, not even left, you know, we're very proactive on this, but, you know, left to build links blind, who does it sit with? And that's a question I'm going to leave with everybody.
Yeah. Well, the time has totally rocked on.
Yep.
So the only thing left to say is, what conversations would you like to have with people, and where can they find you?
I would love to have conversations with people who want to think about search differently, who are, you know, who want to work backwards from their business goals and figure out what needs to be done to drive that growth. Often that's digital PR as a contributing factor. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's content. Sometimes it's tech SEO. But one of my big priorities this year is to sort of change the mindset of as many people as possible that SEO is too frequently looked at the wrong way. It's, you know, it's not worked backwards from real business goals, and it should be. And, you know, I think when we do that, we are in a very exciting position. And I think, you know, how, if you don't know where you're going, how do you know how you're going to get there? So I would love conversations with anybody who wants to talk about their search strategies and how to maybe look at it differently and prioritize for growth. And, you know, I've seen it mentioned a few times in a couple of books and stuff recently, this whole term of stop the rot, you know, stop doing things that aren't working, aren't having an impact, and focus your efforts on what is working. Find me on Twitter, X, Brockbank James, and find me on LinkedIn, or drop me an email, james@digitaloff.co.uk.
Brilliant. Well, James, many thanks for your time today.
Having me. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.